Now it's time to call upon our Brother John for those necessary words of exhortation. Brother John.
Of the hymns that we have on the hymn board, three of them, they're the only three, in our hymn book that have scriptural references to the book of Proverbs, from which we wish to draw our exhortation this morning. And in chapter 4, at verse 23, it tells us to keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Solomon is known for his 3,000 Proverbs, and we know that Hezekiah added to the original book more of those 3,000 Proverbs to give us the book we have today. So obviously there was a collection of 3,000 Proverbs of Solomon, and there was also a special book of Proverbs which incorporated some of those 3,000. And we find that it would have in the beginning consisted of two parts, chapters 1 to 9, and chapters 10 to 24, Hezekiah adding the remainder. Until the printing press, very few could afford to own even a small book such as Proverbs. It would take approximately 4 weeks for a scribe to hand copy it from another copy, be sure that it was correct. So it is reasonable to ask, who then was this special book of Proverbs written for? And that question seems to be answered within itself, for it 21 times addresses its content to my son, and 4 times to my sons, in the original book which Solomon had prepared during his reign. Thus, one could conclude that Solomon prepared a special collection of Proverbs written specifically for his son Rehoboam. And that raises the question, why? We know Solomon was known for his 3,000 Proverbs in the latter half of his reign, and undoubtedly his court scribes copied them out, which suggests this special compilation was prepared and given to Rehoboam when he would have been about 25 to 30 years old and was very likely already a father himself, the father of Abijam. The book's purpose is clearly stated, Proverbs 1 and verse 2, to know wisdom and to know instruction, to discern understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, to receive instruction in righteousness, to receive instruction in justice, and to receive instruction in equity. And this is later repeated in a quotation in Proverbs 4 at verse 3. I was my father's son. He, that is David, taught me, saying, and he then quotes his father, let thy heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. Take fast hold of instruction, let not go. Keep instruction, for instruction is life. These statements strongly suggest Solomon meant this book to be a continual reference guide to his son, that his son, when he would become king, would reign with the same understanding and wisdom God had given Solomon. And that wisdom would be the understanding heart of his father David. And we can recall that Solomon's request to the Lord when he first became king, was stated in this way, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am a little child. I know not how to go out or come in. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this, thy so great a people? Solomon wanted a heart like the heart of David his father, that he might rule wisely as God's king over God's people. So from these, there appears to be strong evidence that Solomon would have wanted to give written instruction to his son, that he learn what it is to have an understanding heart to reign as king over God's people. It is also obvious that from the time of Rehoboam having been weaned, Solomon would have had many discussions with his son to instruct him in the ways of an understanding heart. Discussions that would have spanned a time period of 35 years. Now, considering we will be reading the book of Proverbs over the next 4 weeks, it seems appropriate to consider how Solomon might have instructed Rehoboam and how this book of Proverbs would be a gift to his son as a reminder of his verbal instruction. In that regard, we've chosen to create a scenario of instruction from one proverb in today's reading to perhaps enter into the personal instruction of a father to his son and the subsequent use of that instruction by the son. We remember that Rehoboam went to Shechem, thinking the people would gladly anoint him king, and found himself in a circumstance he didn't expect. The people petitioned the king, saying they would gladly give him their allegiance to be their king, provided he lessened the tax and servitude burdens. Rehoboam didn't know what to answer and asked for 3 days to be able to consider their request. Rehoboam, for the first time in his life, was asked to make a decision with lifelong consequences of his reign. A decision that would require him to draw upon all the instruction and example of his father Solomon. And we know the story. The old men, they come and give him one advice. And the young men of his age, not very young, for they all would be around 40, they give him their advice. But what we easily forget is that Rehoboam spent 3 days contemplating what to do, for he had to consider their advice as to which one would retain for him the kingdom. And he knew it had very dire consequence. We do not know what Rehoboam's thoughts were, but through imagination, we can construct for ourselves thoughts that would be helpful to us if we had to make that kind of a decision under such circumstances. And that is what we propose to do, drawing upon the one proverb from today's reading, Proverbs 4, verse 14. Do not enter into the path of the wicked, and do not go in the way of evil. Avoid it. Turn from it. Now, like the advice to Rehoboam, the proverb presents diametrically opposed opinions. So we must determine if one of those opinions that have been given to Rehoboam is the path of wicked, the path of evil, or the way of righteousness. Perhaps Rehoboam recalled when Solomon spoke to him of 2 Samuel chapter 24, the time when his father David also petitioned the king of Israel. When David was in great duress, under a death warrant, relentlessly pursued by Saul, and found himself trapped inside a cave with 600 men, into which Saul entered to get some sleep, while Saul's 3,000 men protected the cave's entrance. The 600 urged David to kill Saul as he slept, for they knew that the 3,000 men outside would, without their king, simply melt away back to their homes, and thus David and his men would be free of Saul forever, and David could then be king of Israel. Thus David finds himself, for the first time, with power to rid himself of the man who sought his life and make himself king of Israel, for which he was anointed by Samuel the prophet. The circumstances of Rehoboam and David are similar, both concerned making themselves king of Israel by satisfying the request made of them. And that means the outcome of what David did would have meaning in Rehoboam's situation. Perhaps Rehoboam remembered his father Solomon telling him about David's situation in a very personal way, say by quoting David, as David might have spoken it to Solomon when he was young. Perhaps he told Rehoboam this way, David, my father, instructed me with these words, my son, hear the instruction of my voice. I concurred with the wicked thoughts of those 600 men, and I entered into the path of the wicked, for I went in the way of their evil thought, and I quietly crept up to the sleeping Saul with my knife in my hand. And though I did not kill Saul, I raised my hand against the Lord's anointed, and I cut off the bottom edge of Saul's robe. Then I crept silently back to the 600. And with a smile of victory on my face and gladness in my heart, I held up my trophy of my symbolic slaying of Saul. It was then my heart smote me for the evil I had done. It was then my countenance fell, for it was then I knew I had done evil. And knowing I had done evil, I whispered to the 600, far be it toward the Lord that I should do this thing against the Lord's anointed. So the lesson is that the advice of the 600 would have gotten David the kingdom immediately by the strength of his hand. Obviously, David accepted their advice. He did what they wanted him to do, but he restrained himself from killing Saul. Yet even in restraining himself, his heart smote him, and his confession of what he did wrong satisfied the 600, so that they then lay in quiet as though asleep until Saul awoke. Now Solomon's proverb in chapter 4 goes on to say just that. Verse 16, evil men do not sleep except they have done mischief. And they had gotten David to do mischief. But something caused David to realize he had done evil. He didn't kill Saul. He just cut off the edge of his robe. And there is a big difference between killing and cutting off a piece of cloth. And that would be another part of David's instruction to Solomon. Perhaps Solomon told Rehoboam why by again quoting what his father David had told him years earlier. Perhaps quoting David something like this. David, my father said, my son, always remember the law of the Lord spoken through Moses. For in Numbers chapter 15 and verse 38, the sons of Israel are commanded to put upon the fringe of their garments a riband of blue, that we look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord, and that we do them, and that we seek not after our own heart and after our own eyes. You see, my son, I knew I was anointed to be king after Saul, but here I began to understand that no man is guiltless in raising his hand against the Lord's anointed, not even for what I did. In that, we see an understanding heart. The heart of David, to which the subsequent kings of Judah are compared to, as not having a heart as the heart of David, their father. Now, we might recognize that as the reason Solomon prepared this special collection of proverbs he appears to have given to his son, he did so as stated in the summary of his prologue, which states in chapter 1, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. To which Solomon added the converse, fools despise wisdom, and fools despise instruction. That perfectly defines Rehoboam's predicament. His choice of answer will show him to be a wise king with an understanding heart, or to be a foolish king, a king who went after his own heart and after his own eyes, not hearkening to the ribbon of blue that would be on the bottom of his own robe, which would be on the bottom of the robe of everyone in Israel. But that said, we see that our example proverb had another part to it. Chapter 4 and verse 18, the path of the just is as the shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is as darkness. They know not at what they stumble. Solomon may have explained this part of the proverb by again quoting how his father David taught him. Perhaps quoting David as saying something like this. My father David said to me, when Saul awoke and went out of the cave into the light of day to where his men were, I, David, waited until they began to leave. And then I stepped out of the cave into the light, and I called to Saul. My son, you cannot undo sin, but you can bring it into the light, that it may bring about good. And that is what I did, leaving the 600 dumbfounded in the darkness of the cave. I called out to Saul, my lord the king. And when Saul turned to see me, I bowed myself in obeisance to the ground. My eyes fixed upon the ground, I was no longer able to see Saul or his men. And I remained in obeisance and made my plea for judgment to my Lord, the King of Israel, the Lord's anointed. Had Saul said, kill David, I would have died there and then. But the Lord I trust in, preserve me alive. With my head to the ground, I raised my arm and held up the ribbon of blue for all to see and said, moreover, my father, see, yes, see the skirt of thy robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not. Therefore, as says the ancient proverb, wickedness proceeds from the wicked, but my hand shall not be upon thee. Therefore, the Lord judge between us, and see, and the Lord plead my cause, and the Lord deliver me out of thy hand. The result was that Saul recognized the mischief I did against him, showed that I was more righteous than the murderous act he would have done to me had he found me asleep. An obvious lesson to be learned from this is that the Lord is continually active in our lives, and that the Lord does plead our cause, and that the Lord does deliver us in whatever circumstances we find ourselves in. That is, if we trust in him to deliver us and do not take matters into our own hands according to our own heart and eyes. If Solomon instructed Rehoboam in this way, he would obviously also have given Rehoboam other examples, such as from his own life, where he encountered similar circumstance when he was to become king of Israel also. Perhaps referring to 1 Kings chapter 1, Adonijah, Joab, and Abiathar's insurrection. Their intent was the intent of David's 600 men to seize the throne for Adonijah and kill Solomon. So it is again an appropriate circumstance for Rehoboam to consider before making his decision. Perhaps Rehoboam remembered his father Solomon telling him this, perhaps in words something like this: my mother and Nathan the prophet pleaded before David for our lives and for me to be made king. He made Zadok the priest anoint me king. And David himself bowed down unto me as king. And he made me sit upon his throne as king of Israel. When Adonijah heard of this, he did not come before me, but pleaded for his life by holding in his hands the horns of the Lord's altar. I remembered my father's instruction, and I showed him mercy, saying, if you show yourself a worthy man, you will not die. But if wickedness is found in you, then you will die. Not long after, wickedness was found in him by his seeking the wife of my father David to be his wife, that he might lay claim to the throne. And therefore he no longer deserved mercy, and I put him to death. I banished Abiathar the priest, telling him, you are worthy of death, but I will not at this time put you to death, because you bear the ark of the Lord God before David my father, and because you were afflicted in all wherein my father David was afflicted. But as for Joab, I was told he took hold of the horns of the altar in his hands, which showed he too was again guilty of conspiring with Adonijah, thus unworthy of mercy. Therefore, I slew him at the altar. These examples teach a very important lesson, that there is a time and reason to show mercy and compassion toward those who come to plead their cause before the king. And there is a time and reason not to show mercy, rather to show the might of the sword of judgment that is in the king's hand. For mercy and judgment making a decision as to which applies is the duty of the king that sits upon God's throne over his people. Sadly, Rehoboam did not heed the instruction of his father. His very first encounter as king is a plea for compassion, and he chose to instead show them that by the might of his arm, he would force them to be subject to him as their king. Perhaps later Rehoboam might have reflected upon what he did, and perhaps he might have learned the meaning of another proverb. A soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. True, this dividing of the kingdom was the Lord's doing, but Rehoboam made his decision because he despised wisdom and instruction, and his reign suffered the consequence of his foolish choice. For the mount of corruption his father had made opposite the temple became in Rehoboam's reign the many mounts of corruption on every hill throughout his kingdom. And that was not the Lord's doing. That was Rehoboam's doing, the sad legacy of his reign. We're told in 1 Kings 14, he forsook the law of the Lord and all Israel with him. We're told in 2 Chronicles 12, he did evil because he prepared not his heart to seek the Lord. A millennia later, Jesus said, John 8 and 28, I do nothing of myself, but as my Father taught me, as he taught me, I do these things. He, like Solomon and Rehoboam, received instruction to be king over Israel. First receiving it as a child, which was seen at the age of 12 when he was found in the temple, astounding all with his understanding and answers. Yet because he was but an adolescent boy, he returned home in subjection to Joseph and Mary. So for about another 18 years, until about the age of Rehoboam, when he could have been given the book of Proverbs by his father Solomon, Jesus also continued to learn instruction. And because he took his instruction to heart, we are told that he increased in wisdom and in favor with God and man. And then, being about 30 years of age, he likewise found himself in a circumstance he never before experienced, for he found himself given the Holy Spirit without measure. No man had ever been faced with such a challenge, how to control oneself so as not to misuse infinite power. A snap of the fingers, so to speak, and he is king of all the world, no man or nation capable of withstanding him. There is a modern proverb, power corrupts, but absolute power absolutely corrupts. And that was Jesus' battle. And Jesus was driven into the wilderness 40 days to apply all his instruction of some 30 years to hold in check every desire of a man's heart that a heart can conceive of, so that he would only use that power as God would use it, and not corrupt God's way upon the earth. 40 days he wrestled with that and overcame every desire of the heart, and he returned in the power of the Spirit to begin the great work God set before him. 3.5 years later, he again is brought to a circumstance demanding he make a final decision for his kingship. And in great agony, he suffered every desire of his heart to be released from what lay ahead of him. that it be done in another way if the Father was willing to change the way. And Jesus held those desires at bay. Not my will, but thy will be done. And an angel appeared and strengthened him, showing the Lord is active in our life. And hears our pleas and will strengthen us to come to a proper and right conclusion. In Jesus, we see the principle of the examples of David and Solomon's instructions to their sons. We see the examples of the ribbon of blue in its perfection, for Jesus would have a ribbon of blue on his robe from his infancy. He looked upon it. He remembered all the commandments of the Lord. He did them. He did not seek after his own heart. He did not seek after his own eyes. For he took to heart his Father's instruction that he might have an understanding heart like the heart of David that was before him, so that he, by God's grace, would be set upon the throne in due course of time. And because he did that, we are here today to remember him. Without the timeless instruction God has caused to be written, there would be no salvation for us from sin and death. So as we spend the next 4 weeks, God willing, reading the Proverbs, perhaps we should take a little more time in the quiet solitude of our own minds to reflect upon the great principles of instruction contained in those Proverbs that Solomon wrote down in the wisdom God gave him, in the wisdom to write down the instruction of the understanding heart of his father David. And as we contemplate, we too find ourselves faced with a question. For we must answer, when I examine myself, am I preparing my heart as a heart after the heart of God, as did David, our father, and his greater son, our Lord?